WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 815-915-WMFO. That's the telephone number.
It is indeed.
855-915-9636 spells WMFO. So you punch that into your phone, you call in, you talk. We love to hear from our listeners.
We do indeed.
And it is the last show of May. Summer.
I was going to say, you paused. Week. I was like, we're not doing this anymore,
no, D? No, it'll be summer next week.
It
meteorological
will.
Summer begins.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
On Saturday. Someone needs to tell the weather that because it's meteorological. I don't know what the heck this is outside. It's
right?
Like,
I'm wearing a coat right now. Or I'm not wearing a coat right now, but I was wearing a coat when I walked in here.
I'm wearing a sweater.
I know. It's creeping me out.
In May.
In the end of May.
Why is the sweater creeping
like usually
you out?
I've always said because it's May.
Oh, okay.
And because you look kind of like a sleazy college professor.
What are you talking about? I look like a fisherman. This is my fisherman sweater.
Well, then give me some salmon, Derek.
If I had salmon, I would gladly share it with you. It would be smoked and delicious.
Smoked and delicious.
Yes.
Just like me. This is really, it's like, I mean, it used to be because my birthday's May 3rd. Thank you all for calling in to wish me happy birthday. What?
No one likes you.
Yeah, apparently. But I'm used to my birthday being the day that it's suddenly spring and like suddenly like all the April showers, so to say, have gone away. And
usually,
all of a sudden it's just really pretty out all the time.
Usually we get that first whack of 85 and humid the first weekend of May. And
yeah.
We're still waiting for it.
I was going to say, we've had like hot days, but then they've been followed by really, really like, is it the beginning of March kind of days?
So I think I've mentioned that I hurt my back doing Titanic with Voices of Hope.
Yes.
Because that is my dedication to the theater. So it got hot over the weekend.
Theater.
And Sunday, I'm like, because Sunday I was at Harbor Point at the JFK Library, and it was hot there. And I'm like, okay, the house is going to be stifling tonight. Got to put the air conditioner in. So I, despite the back pain, drag the air conditioner inside.
Oh, air conditioners are so heavy. That's horrible.
With something of an assist from my wife, who really, you ask her to lift more than 10 pounds and you think she's going to pop a blood vessel.
Molly's tiny, though.
I know, but she should be able to lift more than 10 pounds. We get the thing upstairs.
Molly, I get your back, girl.
I get it in. And when I go to bed...
We get the thing upstairs, I get it in. I'm not going to...
When I go to bed on Sunday night, I realize that's not the right air conditioner for the upstairs bedroom.
Oh, no.
It's the one that goes downstairs, the like 15,000 BTU one. Because
that's the worst feeling in the world.
It sounds like a jet engine. And I'm like, I bought a quiet one so that I wouldn't be woken up in the middle of the night by screaming air conditioner. And I was woken up in the middle of the night by screaming air conditioner. And we haven't needed it since. Like Monday, the temperature dropped into the 40s. And then we haven't even turned the thing on since then. And I'm like, ugh.
Well, that's the thing is like even my car is so confused right now because I keep like, you know, it'll be 80 degrees and I'm driving in the sun, so I'll put the air conditioner on and then I'll leave it just, you know, at like the coldest it can be. And then the next morning I wake up and it's 40 degrees and I'm like, it takes me like 3 minutes of driving to be like, why am I freezing? Oh, right. Because it was ridiculously hot yesterday.
Yeah.
But
it's not working for me. It's really not.
I'm not happy about it at all. Well, in local news, there was a man that was struck and killed early this morning by a commuter rail train in Hanson. The incident happened around 5:30 a.m. near Hanson Station on Main Street. Transit police said the man was near 1070 Main Street when he was struck by an inbound commuter rail on the Kingston-Plymouth line as he was essentially jaywalking. His name is not be released, but service was delayed for several hours and passengers were bussed between Halifax and Whitman during the investigation. Route 27 was essentially closed through a good mile of Hanson. Officials say no foul play was involved, but they're still investigating the situation.
And we get to the annual reminder, do not walk on the train tracks, folks, because
how do we keep hearing these stories?
Because people keep walking on the train tracks.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, thanks, Dee. But I mean, how do people not know yet? Okay, those little arms that come down actually mean something.
Yeah.
They mean don't go, don't walk over here right now. Don't do anything over here right now.
Well, I think I don't know how close to the intersection he was when he got hit. The report that I read said he was trespassing on the tracks, and you are never, ever, ever supposed to be on the tracks. Of course, it's summertime, and everybody does it. It's not like it was back in the 70s when literally everybody did it, but don't walk on the train tracks.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, I mean, and it's not like we're talking about being struck by lightning, and it just happens all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Trains are huge.
Completely preventable
and loud.
Death. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, but you'd be surprised. They can sneak up on you.
Oh, that's true. I mean, I live right near a commuter rail line, and they do. I mean, they do kind of all of a sudden appear.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, it's like if you're swimming in the ocean, you look out for sharks.
Yeah.
If you're walking across train tracks, you look out for a train.
But the thing about swimming in the ocean is that's something that you can do recreationally and it serves a purpose. Walking on the train tracks doesn't. Okay. Back in the day when walking the train tracks was the quickest distance from point A to point B, I understood. I get it.
I would say, have none of these people seen the movie Stand By Me?
We live in an age now where Uber and bicycles and scooters are sitting on every corner waiting to take you wherever you need to go, so you don't need to walk on the train tracks, and you should not, do not walk on the train tracks.
Mm-mm.
I say this as someone who used to walk on the train tracks. Don't walk on the train tracks.
I used to too, but they were defunct train tracks, so it didn't matter.
Yeah. I only ever had one close call where I got stuck on a bridge with a train, and fortunately the train was... It was a two-rail bridge, so you could hop over the center divider and let the train go by, but did get stuck on a bridge with a train. Not fun.
Ooh.
Not recommended. You don't want to be near those trains when they are whizzing by you at 50 miles an hour. Don't walk on the tracks.
Don't walk on
kids.
The tracks.
Don't walk
or kids
on the
or
tracks.
Full-grown adults.
Here's some good news from CBS Boston. A Wrentham woman whose home was broken into during a funeral hopes other local families were spared her same pain. Mary Frances Randall recently lost her dad, Daniel McIsaac. The proud veteran was buried Memorial Day weekend. During the service, Randall's home security system went off. Someone had tried to get inside. She and her husband quickly thought to call Franklin Police too, fearing her dad's home had also been targeted. Fortunately, the couple had removed many of McIsaac's valuables from his Franklin condo. There, police found Daniel Lennon of Stoughton. Daniel Lennon of Stoughton. Daniel Lennon of Stoughton. Remember the name of this dirtbag. Daniel Lennon of Stoughton. Allegedly with a list of addresses, homes of other people who'd lost loved ones and would be attending services. This guy is reading the obits and knocking over houses while people are at the funeral.
That's absurd.
Daniel Lennon of Stoughton is the man that police arrested. And his mugshot is pretty sad. This is a pretty sad looking guy because I think he knows he is not going to be warmly received in prison.
No, he's not. I mean, that's...
You know that thing where you put a bar of soap in a sock?
Yeah, they call it glocking someone?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Or glocking?
No, I think that is glocking.
Yeah, glocking. When you just put something heavy in a sock and just...
Yeah. This guy needs to keep away from socks.
Oh, my goodness. That is like the grossest thing you can do.
Lennon was arrested and held on $50,000 cash bail over the weekend. He was arraigned in the Wrentham District Court on the new charges and a warrant for outstanding charges by the United States Marshal's Office. He was charged with the following offenses for crimes committed in the town of Franklin: possession of burglarious instrument, disorderly conduct, breaking and entering for misdemeanor, malicious wanton damage to property, possession of a Class E substance. I don't know which Class E substance it is.
I didn't even know there were. I mean, I know Class A and Class B. Or, I guess I'm thinking schedule. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. No, Class E. Massachusetts uses class and not schedule.
I mean, it's not surprising. Well, it's just like I was just talking to my boyfriend about... Hi, Sean. I was just talking to my boyfriend about how I played guitar for a little while. Like, I took guitar lessons. And my teacher was like, look, I'm going to level with you. You clearly have some musical talent, but this is not your calling. And, like, I don't want to waste your money or either of our time. You're never going to be good at this. So I just kind of hung my guitar in the wall. But then I talk about Legends of Summer all the time. Go see them. They play all over Boston. But one, the bassist for Legends of Summer, who's my cousin's husband, does he teaches at an after school program for underprivileged kids at this, like, I guess it's, you just call it kind of a multimedia school, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's to teach them music. And somebody robbed a couple of years ago, somebody robbed them for over $10,000 worth of instruments and equipment.
That's poor.
So I ended up donating my guitar there. But like I said to him, it's like, how terrible are people? Like, rob Green Day. I don't know why Green Day was the first band to pop into my head, but like, rob someone who can recoup the loss.
Yeah.
Talk about adding insult to injury. To rob the home of someone who just passed as his family is at his funeral. That takes a special kind of terrible person.
This is the lowest kind of dirtbag crime imaginable.
Yeah. Like, I can't even fathom somebody legitimizing in their brain doing that.
Well, if you're a drug addict, and Class E is lower than marijuana, so it's prescription pills. He's got some prescription pills that he may have stolen from the house. Who knows? But, yeah.
Okay, so he's on Percocet and doing this.
So, and this guy may be responsible for a number of burglaries in and around the South Shore area. So let's hope.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Let's hope they pin some more on him and send him away for a good long time, because I have zero sympathy for this. Zero sympathy for this. This is one of the lowest things that a human being can do to another human being. And reminds us, if you are going to be attending a funeral, when a family member passes, you want to make sure someone is in your home while you are at the funeral. Not just your home, but the home of the deceased.
Oh, yeah.
Because people like this exist. This is a thing that happens.
And it's unfortunate that that's a necessary thing to do.
It shouldn't, but these mental midgets, these soulless mental midgets who are driven by their addictions and driven by their compulsions, walk amongst us and are looking for opportunities to prey upon you. When you have somebody in the house, they don't have the opportunity. So there you go. Good advice. If you're going to a funeral, if it's your family member who's deceased, if it is the home of the deceased, or you are listed as a family member of the deceased in the obituary, plan on having somebody in your house.
Yeah. Somebody who's not close to the deceased, but is close enough to you to do that for you.
Don't rely on the burglar alarm. And the burglar alarm saved the day in this case. But don't rely on the burglar alarm.
Yeah.
Because some of these guys can get around the burglar alarms. They're not concerned about that. They know you're not home. And they know if the burglar alarm goes off, they've still got 10 minutes to go in and create mayhem before the police show up.
God, so many people are the worst. It's insane.
Going to a funeral, have someone in your home.
It's absurd. I mean, especially because if there's one thing that we could... that we should respect in this world, it's solemnness around death. As I've talked about on the show before, my father was an undertaker, and it definitely taught me to have some respect for the dead.
Yeah.
To have respect for not just respect for the dead, but respect for the people that are left behind and the experience they have to go through in those couple of weeks. And I mean, it's the ultimate insult to injury.
Yeah.
Like that. Wow, that really makes me angry. Speaking of terrible people, a Quincy lawyer convicted on charges stemming from a violent robbery in 2015 that left a Marshfield man dead will not be sentenced until after he is retried on a murder charge. Michael Mascarotolo, which is crazy, I know his sister, was found guilty last month of burglary, unarmed robbery, and 5 counts of larceny of a firearm. But Superior Court Judge Cornelius Moriarty declared a mistrial on the murder charge after the jury could not agree on a verdict. Mascarotolo was due to be sentenced on the murder charges today, but his attorney, Rosemary Scapiccio, successfully argued that it should be delayed until after the new trial, now scheduled for January of 2020. And this is according to the Patriot Ledger. Mascarotolo, 37, was the first of 4 defendants to go on trial in the death of Robert McKenna, a 45-year-old retired stockbroker who was found dead in a pool of blood in his Marshfield kitchen in September 2015. And yeah, it's weird. I went to middle school, or his sister was my brother's class in middle school. And this, I mean, it bothers me when there's any situation like this. When it's a family you know, first of all. Also, when it's someone, I mean, he's a lawyer. Like you were saying, like this person that robbed a deceased person's house or the family of a deceased person's house, they were clearly like a scumbag that was just addicted to drugs and just, yeah. This is like, dude, you big fat didn't have to do this.
Yeah.
Like, you could have been fine. And it makes me really angry when people that, like, I mean, greed is such a powerful, there's a reason it's one of the 7 deadly sins.
Which yeah.
I don't totally believe in, but I understand the thought process behind, I suppose. I hate reading stories like this.
I want that thing that you have, and I will kill you to get it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's it. And it's just pure, like, I mean, even like a cheesy ambulance chaser lawyer isn't doing too bad. He probably owns his house or his condo or his whatever. Yeah. He doesn't have to worry about bills. He has nice things. Like, even if you look, you can go on the Patriot Ledger and look at pictures of him. I mean, he's wearing a really nice, like, a really nice dress shirt and tie. I can tell it's from Brooks Brothers.
Yeah, well, they spend all their money at Brooks Brothers. That's what lawyers do.
Are you kidding? That's what. Do you know how much time I've spent with my father at Brooks Brothers and Allen Edmonds?
what Brooks Brothers is for.
But that's the thing. The sheer amount of greed that exists. It's baffling. And for somebody, I mean, this guy clearly, the irony being that this guy clearly was one of those white collar guys. The guy that passed, it was clearly one of these white collar guys, and he was a retired stockbroker at 45, which means that he just made his mint and was like, I'm out.
Yep.
And the fact that people couldn't just let him relish that and just let him finish, you know, skate it on out.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating.
That's why you don't retire young, kids,
people are going to be like, how did he manage to retire?
People are going to come by and murder you, and that's not fun.
Evidently so.
If you're at work, they can't murder you. There are people around. They won't do it.
Well, that's another conversation.
In world news, from Bloomberg, this is a very concerning development in world news, which is why I bring this up. Beijing's threat to use its dominance of rare earths in the trade war risks serious disruption to U.S. industry by starving manufacturers of components commonplace in everything from cars to dishwashers and military equipment, and it's a stranglehold that might take years to break. China could wreak maximum havoc by squeezing supplies of the magnets, rare earth magnets, and motors that use the elements, said Jack Lifton, co-founder of Technology Metals Research, LLC, who's been involved with rare earths since 1962. The impact on American industry could be devastating, he said from Michigan. Quote, there is no such thing as an automobile sold in the U.S. or made in the U.S. that doesn't have rare earth permanent magnet motors somewhere in its assembly, Lifton said. It would be a tremendous hit to the consumer appliance industry and the automotive industry. That means washing machines, vacuum cleaners, cars. The list is endless. Beijing is gearing up to use the minerals as a counter in its trade battle with Washington, according to a salvo of media reports in China on Wednesday, potentially exploiting U.S. reliance on China for about 80% of its supply. It would represent a significant escalation in a trade dispute that has already roiled markets and threatened global growth. Most of the rare earths mined outside China still end up there for processing. Even the sole U.S. mine at Mountain Pass in California sends its material to the nation as Beijing seeks to dominate manufacturing of higher value products. Now, what is rare earth? Well, rare earth is magnetic, and these magnets are used in everything from personal computers to cars to appliances to hand tools. Basically, if it's got an electric motor in it or it's got a motor in it,
there's that in there.
There's a rare earth magnet in there somewhere. Now, the problem that you have here isn't necessarily a problem of production or reserves. The United States produces 15,000 tons of rare earth every month. I think that's every month. Yes, maybe, is this monthly or annually? They don't tell you what it is. This might be annually. 15,000 tons of rare earths from the United States. We have 1.4 million tons in reserve. Australia produces 20,000 tons. Brazil has 22 million tons of rare earth in reserve and mines 1,000 tons a month. So it's not like you can't go get the stuff. The problem is that you have to refine it. Now, China produces 120,000 tons of rare earth every year. Wow. And has 44 million tons in reserve. What has happened, and what never should have been allowed to happen, is that China cornered the world market on rare earth processing. Because you can't just take rare earth and throw it in stuff. You've got to make the magnets. You've got to refine it to make the magnets.
Yeah, like, it's not like you just mine it and it's done.
And the reason they like rare earth magnets is because they never ever lose their charge. Rare earth magnet will keep basically the same power forever.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
So these are hugely valuable elements. So China, as a way of encouraging other companies around the world to manufacture their goods in China, said, hey, we are the world leader in rare earth magnets. If you want to build something with rare earth magnets in it, it's cheaper to do it here in China, where they already are, than it is to have us ship you the magnets, you build it, and da, 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 da. So while no one is looking, China gets 80%.
I was just going to say, according to Bloomberg, it's 80%.
80% of the world market in rare earth magnets.
And that's like a vast, I mean, other than that, Estonia randomly has 6%. France has 3%. Japan has 3%. And then the other 8% is just whoever else. But that's, yeah, I mean, that's, if you want to talk about a monopoly on something, that's, I mean, 80% is staggering. Like 50% would be staggering, but 80% in the entire world, when we have how many countries? I mean, what are there? Two something?
Now, I always forget. This is a really, really interesting development by China, and something that I certainly did not see coming. I would imagine there are some people in the industry that knew this was the case, and None of them piped up, and I'm sure this caught Trump by surprise, and I'm sure this caught a lot of people by surprise. All of a sudden, China's like, yeah, okay, no more rare earth. Well, wait a minute. We can't build tanks. We can't build cars. We can't build appliances.
Yeah, they've kind of got everybody over a barrel with this.
Yeah. China now has an unassailable position if you want the modern world to continue to function.
I was going to say, if you want the modern world to continue to be modern.
This is why monopoly is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And this never should have been allowed to happen. The United States and other countries should have sounded the alarm about this two decades ago. But nobody did, because everybody's asleep at the wheel and nobody's paying attention. And now you start to understand just how powerful China has become. Because if China goes ahead and stops exporting rare earth to the United States, we're done. The trade war is over, because it will take us years to develop the production capacity to be able to refine these things. And then it will cost more than it does in China. So everybody outside of the United States may still be getting their Chinese rare earth magnets at a reasonable cost. In the United States, they're going to cost more, which means our products cost more, which means...
I would say it's almost like product blackmail in a way, because basically now China can say to us like, okay, you do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Or screw you. You're not getting this.
It's an unassailable position. And if you don't quite understand what's going on here, let me give you a different example. Let's assume for a second that all of the screws, everybody knows what a screw is. We all use screws. Assume that all of the screws.
Wait, Phillips, that or flathead? Sorry.
Doesn't matter.
How'd you do it?
Every screw in the world comes from Belgium. Belgium has a complete monopoly on the world's screw supply.
Really? I didn't know that.
And if anybody messes around with Belgium, they're going to cut off the screws. And then you can't fasten anything anymore. And so Belgium's basically sitting there saying, come at me, bro. You want screws. You need screws. You're not getting any screws. And everybody's like, all right, Belgium, what do you want? That's what this is.
Yeah.
That's what this is. This is China saying, hey, we're essentially the only supplier of this vital component in everything that you build. You want to play rough, we'll play rougher.
And that's, like you said, that's the reason any place having a monopoly on anything is not good.
No.
And the reason it does not work, because you can't negotiate with, whether it be between two countries or just between two people, you can't negotiate when there is like, when it's just, I have everything. It's the only way that negotiations and compromise comes about is when it's, I have this and you have this. Let's see how we can work together.
Yeah.
If one party has everything, game over.
That's the end of your trade war right there.
It's not, I was going to say, it's not even a negotiation. It's a calling uncle.
And this isn't even a nuclear option from China. This is China just saying, you know, we could do this. Because there are worse things that China could do. China could put massive tariffs on, China could stop importing U.S. goods entirely.
Yeah.
They could cut off exports to the United States.
I want everyone to walk around just their bedroom right now and flip over a couple items. I bet at least 10 of them say made in China on the bottom of them.
And this, by the way, I have talked about China and the problems with China trade on this show for many years. This is a perfect example of what China does. China plays a long game. China's not interested in today. China's not interested in tomorrow. China's interested in 30 years from now. And what they try and do is corner the market on commodities and price everybody else out of business so that they're the only ones left making the stuff. When it comes to rare earth magnets, they've succeeded. So now, if you want to have cars and tanks and airplanes and dishwashers and drills and circular saws, guess what? You got to use Chinese magnets.
Have you ever heard that John Oliver joke about the United States in relation to Britain? He basically talks about how, first of all, it's a pity that we all can't have this wonderful accent. That's all your fault. But he talks about, he's like, you know, you act like we were the only ones that engaged in imperialism, but you do the exact same thing. You just took the baton right in front of us and you're running towards China while they're waiting to take it and take us to the finish line. And it's a cheeky, silly joke, but and it came out in a special maybe a decade ago. But I remember it's the opening to a special. And I remember listening to that joke being like, you know, I have a feeling that he's going to be proven right.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is a prime example of this is China just threatening to just kind of knock the United States off their pedestal.
But here's,
or off our pedestal, I should say. I guess I'm a member of the United States, so
but
it's ours.
This doesn't happen unless a lot of people are asleep at the switch. This doesn't happen unless other nations allow it to happen. You have to be actively ignoring what China is doing in order for them to corner the market on a basic component in all of our technology. And that's precisely what the United States did. And not just the United States, Canada, Britain, Germany, Japan, everybody. Asleep at the switch while China corners the market on something critical and says, you know what? You're going to fight with us? We're going to take it away from you. How's that working out for you?
Yeah. How you like them apples?
China holds all the cards right now.
Well, that's the thing is that we don't, I mean, when it comes to something like that, we don't have any card to play. It's like saying, it's like a country saying we have all the water.
Yeah.
Like it's basically like there's nothing we can do but to say mercy and say like, what, how can I make you let me have some of this?
Now, somebody else could come along and process rare earth magnets, but it's going to take them time to set up those facilities.
It's
going to
take a while. Yeah.
It's not going to happen tomorrow. So here's your net result now. China just won the trade war. I got news for you. China just won. Donald Trump has nothing against this because...
Hands tied.
As much as, you know, he may have been willing to keep up with the sanctions, and as much as the tariffs and the sanctions against China are a good idea, precisely because China behaves like this. This is what they do. I've explained this. They corner the market.
Which I mean...
Corner the market, control the world.
While not happy about it, bravo to them because it's genius.
Listen, I give the Chinese are formidable competitors, and I give them every bit of credit in the book. The problem is they are not fair competitors.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is like it's not a proper negotiation.
No.
It's essentially blackmail.
You are going to watch this trade war unwind very, very quickly now, and China is going to give up nothing. And somebody is going to have to step up and figure out how do we get the rare earth magnet market share spread out again? And number two, what else is China trying to corner the market on? And number three, how do we stop that?
Yeah, they really do have us over our barrel. It's... rather not so patooey.
Hey, Chris, how you doing? You want to hop on the air?
Oh, is our friend calling?
All right.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Shay. How are you?
I'm lovely, thank you. How are you?
Good.
So, Chris, global monopolies, China's cornered the market. We're over a barrel because nobody bothered to think, hey.
Maybe we should do this, too.
Maybe China shouldn't make...
Listen to what I have to say about China. You're going to find it interesting. But first, the brief thing about the rare earths. When you talk about magnets and motors, okay, all AC motors that plug into the wall, any appliance in your house, any tool that plugs in, don't need any magnets at all because AC motors make their own magnetism through coils. You don't have to have magnets in them. The only ones that need magnets are DC motors, which means cars, anything that is rechargeable that uses a battery, or anything that converts the power to DC, which you don't have to do. And in vehicles, there's only one motor that I need. That's the starter motor. Because you have to have a starter to start the engine. Also, the little mower that makes blowers, but as far as all those motors on the seats and all, I don't need that crap. Also, the wiper motor.
The wiper motor usually has rare earths in it.
Yeah, it has to, yeah, because it's a DC motor. Because the only way DC motors work, with direct current, you can't make the magnetism. You can make it in one coil, but that has to react to magnets because you can't make bolt from DC because of the way it works. And we should never have been shipping ore to be processed in China in the first place. It is available in other countries. And so although they have a lot of it there, we could get by without it if we didn't use it to make all this unnecessary rechargeable crap. Because when I use tools and stuff, I have plug-in ones.
Yeah.
Power almost everywhere, and I have generators too. So that's unfortunate that they've processing all that over there and letting them do that. But as far as China goes, if I was president or something like that, or I was in a position to do it, I would first spend a couple of months meeting with all of our allies, NATO, Western Europe, Japan, and all the free countries, India, all that, being very friendly and very cooperative and doing everything possible to strengthen those friendships, not what Trump has done. Because that's very important in working out all the favorable trade between the free democratic countries of the world.
Oh, absolutely.
And I would try to get them all to agree, because it takes a while. It would take time to negotiate this, starting off being very friendly, and then later, as you get most people on board, you get tough if you have to. But I would try to get everybody to agree, not just us, although we're China's largest customer, but all the free countries of the world, which constitute almost all of China's business, because they have about 80-something percent export economy. I would try to get them all to get on board with a plan where we would make a joint announcement all together that would tell China that we're willing to keep trading with them, but we don't really need them. They need us, because we've survived for years trading with each other. And that I would give them some reasonable deadline, and I'd consult with experts and put together a panel and really put some serious planning into it. I would give them a deadline, like maybe 30 days, to get all the nuclear missiles and all of the nuclear bombs out of North Korea. And if they did it, we'd keep trading, because it's more leverage if you offer to keep doing something. If they didn't, all trade would be cut off with all countries. There'd be a total embargo. They wouldn't be able to ship anything across anybody's land, airspace, waters, any canals that were located in or built by any of the countries. So they wouldn't just be able to sell their stuff. They wouldn't be able to get it to the other countries that might want it, unless it borders them. So they can't have that happen, because their entire economy is dependent upon exports. They'd have a complete collapse, and their government would fall. And their government is an evil dictatorship.
If they cooperated
about the first thing, I would then say they had some longer time, whatever, 90 days, 6 months, to get all the conventional weapons out of North Korea, because they put it all there. They sponsored it. They took it over. And then after that, I tell them they have to get out and take their boy Kim Jong-un sub with them. Because why should we be sanctioning a dictatorship that they created? It's their fault. We never should have let them have half of Korea. MacArthur was right. Get them out of there. Then I do the same thing with Tibet, a defenseless little country that they're occupying. And then after that, Hong Kong. And if they didn't want to do it, we would just cut off the trade. We'd trade with each other. Put their government out of business. If they did all that, I'd keep adding on more. I said, okay, get the people out of the concentration camps in your country. Stop killing and slaughtering people in Falun Gong. Stop censoring everybody. Stop putting everybody in prison who protests anything, or, you know, have freedom of the press, have human rights. It's a brutal dictatorship. All this money they're getting from the U.S. and our allies and all the other countries, they're using it to amass weapons. They're the biggest threat to our world on the planet.
Well, keep in mind,
we've been boycotting them for years.
We're coming at this with the much more modest goal of stop stealing our intellectual property and stop floating your currency on the global market.
Yeah, stealing everything. So you can have all the patents you want. They'll just steal it.
Yeah.
They'll just make it. They'll disguise it. They'll ship it to other countries. And they'll ship all kinds of, you know, lead-contaminated toys, poison food, the drywall with the sulfur in it that they had to tear down houses. And they're laughing. They're you know, because stupid people buy this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't buy it. And it's not easy. 95% of the stuff in the stores is from China.
Oh, yeah. You can't. It's almost, as Shay said, go take a walk through your house and look at everything that's made in China.
Yeah.
You know, it's insane how much of our products are made in China. I'm like you, Chris. I go out of my way to avoid Chinese-made goods because of the counterfeiting problems, because of the quality problems, because, you know, you give me a country that takes pride in what they make, and a company that takes pride in the product that they make, and I will show you something that is a much better value for your money than the 99-cent Chinese equivalent.
Because I repair stuff and fix just about everything known to humans, I'm constantly advising people, well, you see this that broke or that broke? See where it's made? China? it's going to break. Don't buy it from China.
But try convincing Americans of that, because we're all like, what's cheap? Give me whatever's cheapest. Is it cheap? Is it cheap? Is it on sale? Is it cheap? Oh, I agree with you 100%, because I was raised that way.
They believe, as a business philosophy, in making things to fail. Now, U.S. corporations started that, but China takes it to the extreme.
Lee Iacocca had that idea.
They also, like, 8 is a lucky number in Asian cultures. So they literally are designing things to break after 8 months, except for the BRICS, where it's 8 years. When they have an earthquake over there, it's amazing how many things collapse. Yeah. I don't even know how you make BRICS to fail after 8 years, but if you can figure out a way to do it, they've done it.
I mean, talk about an engineering marvel to figure out how to make BRICS break just after her long shelf life.
The stuff like ACs and the old VCRs and, you know, other now equipment that comes from there, it does wear out fast.
Yeah.
Whereas the older ones that are made in the U.S., they still work.
And the Japanese stuff was always well made, too, but you can't even find that anymore. Yep. Chris, thank you.
And stuff from Europe. So the main issue about this is, it's true that they're you know, unfair trade and stealing stuff and hacking and currency, but that's not the issue. To me, it's a moral issue. It's like buying stuff from the Nazis. We shouldn't do it. And if we weren't doing it, other countries would be able to shift stuff. The only good thing Trump has done is the tariffs, but he's doing it for the wrong reason. He wants to have a trade agreement. I don't want to have a trade agreement. I want to stop them from doing all the bad stuff they're doing or collapse their government. We don't have to have a shooting war. We can do it with trade, but we've got to get other countries involved, because otherwise, well, we're their biggest customer. The other countries are big customers too, and we need to do it together and trade with each other, because if these tariffs are there long enough, the 10% didn't do anything. That could be absorbed and people are just waiting it out. But the 25% does. We might see stuff coming from other countries, because we've seen like tools come from India that are made equal or better than China for the same price, but it's not a brutal dictatorship. But that doesn't happen very long, because China then lowers the price of theirs. And even people, I know a lot of people from India who are now settled in the U.S., and they say there's a massive amount of Chinese imports coming into India, a country with almost as big a population as China, with more advanced engineering and stuff. But even their economy is being damaged by the cheap Chinese imports. And if people would see it as what it is, a moral issue, I succeed in finding things that aren't made in China. I have to do some work. I'm willing to pay more money. I'm happy to pay more money, because you can do it. And I complain at the stores. I tell them, look, where's the stuff that's not made in China? It doesn't have to be made in America. I just don't want it made in China. Show me where it is. And I've managed to buy clothes that aren't made in China, which isn't easy.
No, it's not. All right, Chris, thank you for your call.
We go to Dollar Tree and buy things that aren't made in China, which isn't easy, but that's the things I buy. And believe it or not, there's stuff there that's made in America. So if people make the effort, they can do it.
We've got to move on. Thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
And we'll talk to you
soon.
855-915-9636 if you want to be a part of the show. It is The Big Picture. She's Shay Spillane.
Hello.
I'm Derek Gary, I think, still. Yes?
Hang on, let me take a look. Yep, you're still Derek Gary.
Oh, man, I keep hoping that's going to change.
Nope, hair hasn't grown back.
No more. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Here, Boston 5-day forecast.
You always sound kind of like David Allen Boucher when you do that.
It's, you know, it's not good. Showers tonight, lows around 50. 40 is out in the burbs. Cloudy tomorrow. High will get up around 70, so they say. I'll believe that when I see it. Low around 60 tomorrow night. Friday, mostly sunny, and we probably will break 70. Lows in the mid-50s Friday night. Saturday is going to be your winter for the weekend. Temperature about 70 degrees. Lows.
I said winter for the weekend. I was like, 70 degrees is not winter, D.
70 degrees, sunny skies, low around 60 Saturday night. And then Sunday, clouds are back. Might be a shower around. High in the mid-60s, low around 60 degrees on Sunday. And then next week, we're back into more of this rain and, you know, what we've had.
The status quo as it has been in the past several weeks.
Yeah. I did used to have hair, didn't I?
You tell me that. I still am not sure. I'm gonna need to see some proof.
You can find it, actually. It's funny. I was at the JFK Library on Sunday.
Oh, I love it there.
Molly's aunt was in town. Molly was giving a tour, so I went to hang out with her and her aunt and her aunt's friend, who I later found out, I wish I'd known this going in, lost her parents in the Coconut Grove fire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so didn't even get to grill her about that, which I'm sure she would have I'm sure she loves hearing that when she meets somebody.
I was going to say, I'm sure she really loves to talk about that. It sounds like a really wonderful memory for her.
What was it like losing your parents in that horrible, horrible tragedy? It's not really, it's not how you do it. But after the tour, we were sitting and talking and waiting to regroup. And Matt Damon came up and on an image because he's been there.
Oh, I thought you meant he like walked up.
They got a slideshow.
I was
going
like, what is
lobby.
He doing back in Boston?
They got a slideshow going in the lobby, and and someone's like, oh, it's Matt Damon. I'm like, yeah, Matt Damon. And Molly's like, well, you'd know, you were in a movie with him. And there was this group of Russians hanging out, pro Trump, by the way.
Jesus.
Well, because as they said, we came to this country to get away from socialism. They love Donald Trump. But they heard that and they were like, you're in a movie? I'm like, yeah, I was in School Ties. And they're like, what? We were in School Ties? And I'm like, I was in the French class. And they're immediately Googling it.
Oh, of course.
And it turns out that that whole scene is up on YouTube. And I am in the thumbnail for it.
Happened to be the screenshot my God, that is too funny.
So if you Google School Ties French class, I am sitting in back of Yelko Imanek.
I'm Googling that right now.
And it's 21-year-old me, or 22-year-old
little
me.
Little D.
22-year-old me, who still had hair and was real thin. And doing my acting thing with Yelko Imanek.
Oh my God, there you are.
Isn't that?
Stop it.
And you can now watch that clip on demand, so.
This is my favorite thing in the whole world.
Yeah, I was.
Look at little D. Oh God, you're so skinny. And you have hair. It's really off-putting. Yeah. Oh, Derek.
Pretty interesting, huh?
Oh, now I just want to go home and watch School Ties and be like, ha ha, look at Derek.
It's a good movie.
I was going to say, that's the thing, is it is a very good movie.
Yeah.
But just, even more gooder, that's not a thing, even better based on that you're in it, that a young Derek Gary shines across the screen in the French class.
You probably heard that Bill Buckner passed away.
I did.
At the age of 65, suffering from a form of dementia that basically just breaks down your body. And that's kind of, as a Boston sports fan, as somebody who remembers that game well, I always felt for Bill Buckner.
Yeah, I mean, everyone makes mistakes. It's just like it rang around the world.
And
before I even knew who he was or what it referenced, I knew the phrase right between his legs.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that before I even knew what it was in reference to. Because that was 86. That was the year I was born.
And the thing about it is, Bill Buckner did not cause the Red Sox to lose that series.
No.
He just cost them he did cost them that game.
But that's the thing is, it's just like when I played soccer, I was the goalie, and if we lost a game, everybody would always try to blame me, and I'd say, I'm sorry, it had to get past all of you before I missed it.
Exactly.
Like, this was a team loss.
that's pretty much what you're looking at, and there was a whole different game that the Red Sox had to go out and lose that Bill Buckner did not cost them. You know, would they have won that night? Yes. Would that have been the series? Yes. But you can't hang the whole thing on him.
Yeah.
So, sorry to see him go.
Rest in peace, Bill Buckner.
You feel for the guy. Boston fans did finally make their peace with him, which is nice. Rest in peace, Bill Buckner. Thank you for the memories. Even that really, really bad one that we lived with for all these years. But that was only one of two passings in the sports world this past week. And this other one is a big one. we have this conversation about whether or not...
WMFO Medford, by the way.
It's a little early for that, but...
I thought it was 750.
We have this conversation about whether or not Tom Brady is the greatest of all time.
Yes, we have that painfully often.
I will, at the risk of the wrath of Patriot Nation and Bostonians and everyone else, I will tell you that Tom Brady will never be better than number two. Because the greatest of all time passed away on Sunday at the age of 90, at the age of 85, Bart Starr of the Green Bay Packers. Bart Starr holds the record for championship wins of any quarterback ever.
Which I'm sure a lot of people without that knowledge assume that it's Tom Brady.
Five NFL championships. First two Super Bowls. MVP in both of the first two Super Bowls.
Oh, wow.
He has the highest completion percentage of any passer in postseason history. He has the highest percentage of championships of any passer in postseason history. Tom Brady will never break those records. And Bart Starr did that at a time when the caliber of wide receivers and the caliber of running backs was nowhere near what it is today.
Yeah. And so it was like he was carrying that.
He did that at a time when quarterbacks got hit and when defenses played as dirty as they possibly could.
And when I imagine pads and helmets were nothing compared to what they are today.
Bart Starr was the helmets weren't what they are today.
Yeah.
The pads are pretty much the same. Bart Starr was the single greatest player of his era. And that was the era that sort of defined professional football and what professional football would
become. So when was this then?
This was the first two Super Bowls. So right around the merger in 1967.
That's what I was going to say, late 60s.
And then they won the NFL championship the year before that.
Our listeners know I only care about baseball.
The NFL championship basically was the Super Bowl. But the Super Bowl was what happened after the merger when you had the AFL and the NFL finally coming together. So in the NFL, he won three championships, then won two more once all these new teams came along. That's how good Bart Starr was. And Bart Starr off the field was an incredibly generous, kind individual. He was a mentor to other players. He was a mentor to children. Everybody who knew Bart Starr loved Bart Starr. Tom Brady will go down as the single greatest football player of his era.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Of like modern times,
of this generation.
Yeah,
Tom Brady is it, and we may never see a quarterback like Tom Brady ever again. But when you bring the history into it, you know, Bart Starr didn't have a team of nutritionists. Bart Starr didn't have a 365 day a year workout regime.
Yeah,
Bart Starr didn't have a bunch of analysts sitting around breaking down the plays. He didn't have all of these coaches sitting around trying to figure out the best possible game plan.
He was just a dude who's really freaking good at football.
Bart Starr and Vince Lombardi found ways to win football games over and over again.
Represent.
And became the most dominant team of the 1960s.
Well, you know, Vince Lombardi is like the crown jewel of Fordham University.
Oh, yeah.
That's what like our half of the buildings at my college were named after Vince Lombardi.
And he's got a trophy named after him too. That's pretty popular.
He does indeed.
Pretty popular with the football set.
Yes.
So for my money, the GOAT, Bart Starr, 85 years old. God bless him. Everything that he contributed to the game is amazing.
Rest in peace, homie.
Tom Brady, you will be GOAT too. As we head into this break, we are going to hear very briefly from Bart Starr on one of the few audio records that he was ever part of.
Of him, actually.
Yes. And when we come back, more fun and games here on The Big Picture, here on WMFO Medford.
This is Bart Starr of the Green Bay Packers. Go, you Packers, go!
Sarah Beck, consumer meat specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with a few suggestions on handling frozen meat. If you buy meat that is already frozen, be sure to place it in your freezer as soon as you get home. If you can't go directly home with your purchase, the packages can be wrapped in newspaper, for example, to prevent thawing. While freezer storage is a convenient way to keep meat, be sure you check the recommended storage time for each type of meat and date the packages so you'll know which to use first. If stored too long, meat will begin to lose its flavor, but it will still be wholesome. It's best to thaw meat in the refrigerator. If you don't use the meat once it's thawed, you can safely refreeze it as long as it remains in good condition. For more free information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight when On the Town with Mikey D will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO.
That is indeed the telephone number.
Call that number. Be part of the show. We love to hear from our listeners.
Dealer's choice, Derek. Do you want a national? Do you want a entertainment?
I want whatever. Oh God. I don't want an entertainment, which is why I'm going to say, give me the entertainment story, because whatever it is, I'm just going to scoff at it and hate it, and it's going to be terrible.
It's actually something that both of us are interested in.